Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we cut through the noise to get you well-informed, fast. Today we're diving deep into something, well, incredibly personal and really powerful for you, especially as you navigate these college years. We're talking about that profound, interconnected relationship between your daily choices and, you know, your overall well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And just to highlight how critical this is, our sources kick off with a pretty stark reminder. There's this story of a 17-year-old boy who, shockingly lost his eyesight because his diet was just severely poor.
Wow. Yeah, that really drives it home. That old saying, you are what you eat. It can be much more literal than we think sometimes.
Exactly. So our mission for this deep dive is to explore Chapter 11. It basically lays out a comprehensive blueprint for holistic health. We're going to pull out the most important insights, the actionable steps, showing you how your physical, emotional, and mental health, plus your relationships, they all weave together.
We're all connected.
To build a truly healthy and fulfilling life. Let's start unpacking how your daily habits can actually transform your well-being.
Yeah, and it's crucial to get that health isn't just, like, not being sick. It's an active thing, right? It's a daily process of making choices that actually build towards a flourishing life. It means being really aware of what nourishes your body and mind and, you know, how you manage your day-to-day.
That's spot on. And for most of us, I think, when we hear health, physical well-being pops up first. Our sources make it clear, though, this isn't about chasing some kind of perfect body image.
Not at all.
It's more about honoring your body's basic needs so it can just function properly.
Yeah.
You know, feeding your cells the right stuff and minimizing the bad stuff.
Exactly. At its core, physical health works on a pretty simple principle. Get the proper nutrients in and make sure toxins get out. And this whole system really leans on four main pillars: movement, diet, hydration, and sleep. Give your body those essentials, and you're building a really strong foundation for everything else health-wise.
Okay, let's start with healthy eating. Because, like that story showed us, what you put on your plate, it has huge effects. Our sources mentioned the USDA's My Plate guidelines. They're a good starting point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Vegetables, fruits, proteins, grains, dairy.
Yeah, they're definitely a useful framework. But it's also really insightful to look at Harvard's healthy eating plate. It's similar, but with some key differences. It puts more emphasis on water instead of dairy, for example, and suggests more veggies than fruits.
Interesting. What else?
Well, the really big thing, I think, is that it was developed without any food industry lobbying, which means it's purely based on the science, you know, not influenced by companies trying to sell you stuff. That's pretty rare and important.
That is a crucial distinction, especially with all the marketing noise out there. And the sources really emphasize choosing whole foods, things like, you know, carrots, apples, brown rice, black beans, foods that aren't heavily processed.
Right. That's your body's real fuel, packed with vitamins, minerals, all the good stuff. And on the flip side, you want to minimize the processed foods. Cookies, hot dogs, yeah, but even some yogurts or granola bars that seem healthy can be packed with hidden sugars.
Ugh, yeah, the hidden sugars are everywhere.
They really are. And the statistic is pretty shocking. The average American gets about 62% of their daily calories from processed foods.
62%, wow.
Yeah. So that makes understanding food labels absolutely essential. It kind of turns grocery shopping into a bit of a mission.
Okay, so how do we do that? The front of the package can be so misleading with those health claims.
Totally. You got to flip it over. The nutrition facts panel, that's where the truth is.
Yep.
Look at sugar content first. Get this. 12 grams is almost 2.5 teaspoons of sugar.
Whoa.
Yeah. Also, try to minimize sodium and saturated fats. And here's a hard rule. Absolutely avoid trans fats. Look for partially hydrogenated oil. That's the stuff you want to avoid completely.
Okay, no trans fats. Got it. Yeah. What about the good stuff?
Prioritize dietary fiber. Aim for 100% of your daily value for key vitamins if you can. And a good general rule. Fewer ingredients is usually better. And if you can't pronounce them, maybe rethink it.
Good rule of thumb.
Oh, and there are apps like Fujicate that can help. You just scan the barcode and it gives you a breakdown. Pretty handy.
Nice. Okay, so we've talked about food fuel. Let's move to the liquid fuel, hydration.
Mm.
It feels basic, but it's so easy to forget.
Oh, incredibly fundamental. Your body is like 60 to 80% water. Every single cell, every organ needs it to work right. And the sources point out that even mild dehydration, just losing 1 or 2% of your body water, can seriously impair your cognitive performance.
So trying to focus in class or study when you're dehydrated, not going to work well.
Exactly. Your brain is literally thirsty.
And the benefits of staying hydrated are huge, right? More energy, less fatigue, helps with weight, flushes toxins, better skin, digestion, even helps with headaches.
All true. Your brain itself is about 76% water, so keeping hydrated is like keeping your mental engine running smoothly.
How can you tell if you're maybe not getting enough?
A simple check is urine color. If it's dark yellow, you probably need more water. And the steps are simple. Start your day with a big glass of water helps rehydrate after sleeping.
Good tip.
Aim for at least 8 glasses a day. Or, even better, try to drink about half your body weight in ounces.
Okay.
Get a reusable water bottle, better for you. Avoid stuff like BPA, and better for the planet.
Definitely.
And if plain water is boring, add lemon, berries, cucumber, whatever. Just try to minimize sugary sodas and honestly, a lot of fruit juices. Herbal teas are a much better alternative.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, next pillar, exercise. Lots of people think, you know, weight loss or muscles, but the benefits go way beyond that, especially for busy students.
Absolutely. Beyond the visible stuff, regular exercise dramatically improves your sleep quality, strengthens your bones, which is huge long term, gives you way more energy, and lowers your risk of chronic diseases later on.
And there's a cool brain benefit too, right?
Yeah, this one's really interesting for students. Research shows that regular aerobic exercise can actually boost memory and cognition. So maybe going for a jog before hitting the books could actually help you remember stuff better.
That's a great tip. So it optimizes brain power too. What kinds of exercise should we be thinking about?
The sources break it down into 3 main types. There's flexibility stretching, yoga, Tai Chi, good for a range of motion circulation.
Okay.
Then strength training weights, body weight stuff like push-ups, squats, builds muscle, burns calories, keeps bones strong.
Right.
And finally, cardiovascular exercise, jogging, swimming, biking, even HIIT workouts improves how efficiently your body uses oxygen, reduces that daily fatigue. Super important for getting through long days.
So how often?
The guideline is about 150 minutes a week, but the real key message is consistency. Like the source says, it's the daily movement that is most important. Hmm. Find something you actually like doing, you know. That's the exercise you'll stick with.
Good point. Okay, we've covered putting good stuff in. What about keeping bad stuff out? Let's talk toxins, these hidden things in our environment.
Yeah, this is a big one, and it connects back to that diet story, actually. Since the Industrial Revolution, thousands of man-made chemicals have ended up in our food, packaging, cleaners, personal care products. A lot of them are linked to health issues, and they can build up over time.
Yikes.
Hmm.
So what can we realistically do to limit exposure, especially when we might not see the effects for years?
You can start simple, but it's powerful. Try to avoid products that list artificial colors or fragrance on the label. Those terms can hide a cocktail of potentially harmful chemicals, carcinogens, neurotoxins, hormone disruptors.
Oh, just fragrance.
Yeah. It's kind of a loophole.
Yeah.
Think about it. Your skin is your largest organ. It absorbs what you put on it. A good rule of thumb mention is, if you wouldn't eat the ingredients, think twice before applying them to your skin.
That's a stark way to put it.
And again, apps can help. EWG's Healthy Living app lets you scan products to check for hazardous ingredients.
Very useful. Okay, last pillar of physical health, and one that students often sacrifice, sleep. Our sources call it the foundation of amazing health.
It truly is. And it's worrying that almost 40% of adults say they struggle with getting enough sleep. Because while you sleep, your body is doing absolutely critical work. Repairing tissues, detoxing the brain, releasing essential hormones, restoring energy, and strengthening your immune system.
So if you're always catching colds or just feeling drained, sleep could be a major factor.
Definitely a primary suspect.
Most adults need about 8 hours, right?
Yeah.
And not getting it isn't just about feeling tired. The sources say the impacts were actually severe.
Oh, yeah. One study found just 1 week of limited sleep messed with the activity of over 700 genes.
700 genes.
Yeah. Genes involved in the immune system, inflammation, even promoting tumors. Serious stuff.
And that's not all, is it?
Nope. Lack of sleep dramatically increases your risk of heart attack and stroke. It impairs your thinking, makes you more accident prone. Driving drowsy is basically like driving drunk with a blood alcohol level of 0.08%.
That's terrifying.
It also messes with hormones that regulate appetite, leading to weight gain. It disrupts melatonin, increasing cancer risk. And emotionally, it makes your amygdala, the brain's fear center, about 60% more reactive to stress.
So less focus, more mistakes, shorter fuse. Not ideal for college life.
Not at all.
Okay, that's a powerful case for sleep. What are some concrete tips to actually improve sleep quality?
First, you have to actually prioritize it. Make it non-negotiable. Keep a consistent sleep and wake schedule, even on weekends if possible. That helps regulate your body clock.
Consistency is key.
Create a sleep sanctuary. Cool around 65 degrees Fahrenheit. Quiet and dark. Really dark. Even tiny bits of light disrupt melatonin production. Think eye masks, blackout curtains, earplugs if needed.
Okay, cool. Quiet, dark. What about habits before bed?
Avoid eating heavy meals about 2 hours before bed. Steer clear of alcohol and caffeine, especially after lunch. Wind down for about an hour before sleep. Quiet activities, reading a physical book, journaling, listening to calm music, maybe gentle stretching.
What about relaxation techniques?
Yeah, the 4-7-8 breathing technique is mentioned. Breathe in for 4, hold for 7, exhale slowly for 8. It really helps calm the nervous system. Apps like Insight Timer, CallM, Headspace offer guided meditations and sleep stories too.
And exercise helps sleep.
Definitely. Regular daily exercise, even just 30 minutes, improves how fast you fall asleep and how long you stay asleep. Oh, and diet matters too. Diets low in fiber but high in saturated fat and sugar tend to lead to less restorative sleep.
Interesting connection back to diet. The sources also mentioned magnesium.
Right. Magnesium deficiency is pretty common and can interfere with sleep. Eating magnesium-rich foods like pumpkin seeds, almonds, walnuts might help. But importantly, if you have ongoing problems like insomnia or think you might have sleep apnea, you really need to see a doctor. Don't just ignore it.
Good advice. There are resources, too, like from Harvard Medical School or the American Association of Sleep Medicine. Okay, so we've covered fueling and repairing the body, but what about our inner world? Our minds, our emotions, especially dealing with college stress. The stats are concerning. 63% of students reporting anxiety, 42% depression. Cultivating emotional well-being is clearly critical.
Absolutely. This brings us to emotional health and understanding the difference between good stress, the kind that motivates you, like for an exam, and chronic stress. Chronic stress is the damaging kind. It keeps your body in this constant state of high alert.
And that takes a toll, right?
A huge toll. Difficulty concentrating, being more accident prone, increased risk of heart disease, a weaker immune system, messed up sleep, just feeling exhausted all the time, and it can lead to anxiety or depression. It just grinds you down.
Yeah, you hear that military acronym VUCA, sometimes volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous. Feels like it describes modern life, especially college, pretty well sometimes.
It really does. And facing that, our sources suggest a powerful tool is perspective. When something feels overwhelming, try asking yourself, okay, scale of 1 to 100, how bad is this, really? Will I even remember this specific thing in 3 years?
Reframing it.
Exactly. Your perception of the stressor has enormous power over how much it actually affects you.
And a key practice for managing that perception and the stress itself is mindfulness. What does that actually mean, practically speaking?
Mindfulness, as the sources define it, is basically being present with your thoughts, feelings, bodily sensations, and surrounding environment without judgment. It's about tuning into the now, you know, not getting stuck replaying the past or worrying endlessly about the future. It's an act of awareness.
So how can a busy student fit that in?
It doesn't have to be complicated. You can slow down everyday things like brushing your teeth or washing your face and just fully focus on the physical sensations.
Okay.
Or focus on your breath. Yeah. Just notice how fast or slow it is, if it's deep in your belly or shallow in your chest. Try slowing down the exhale.
Simple, but effective.
Or connect to your environment. Take a walk and really notice things, the trees, the sounds, the feel of the air. It pulls you out of your head and into the present moment.
The sources mention a specific breathing pattern, too.
Yeah, the 2-4-6-8 breathing. Breathe in through your nose for 4 counts. Hold it gently for 6, and then exhale slowly through your mouth for 8 counts. It's actually been shown to reduce test anxiety in college students. It physically calms your nervous system.
Wow, okay. Something to try before an exam. And this leads into meditation, right? Which some people find intimidating.
Right. But the message is really encouraging. Even if you're skeptical, like reporter Dan Harris was initially, it's okay if your mind wanders during meditation. That's normal. Every time you notice it wandering and gently bring your focus back to your breath, that's the practice. Harris calls it a bicep curl for your brain. You're strengthening that focus muscle.
I like that analogy.
And you don't need hours. Start with just 3 minutes a day. Apps like Insight Timer, CF, or Headspace are great for guided sessions.
Okay, besides mindfulness and meditation, another really powerful tool for emotional well-being is gratitude.
This one's huge. Our sources explain that practicing gratitude literally changes the molecular structure of the brain.
Yeah.
It leads to feeling happier, more peaceful, and less reactive to stressful situations.
How does that work?
Well, studies show grateful people are generally happier and less depressed.
Yeah.
There was a UC Berkeley study where people wrote gratitude letters, and they reported better mental health for up to 12 weeks afterward, just from writing those letters. It has a lasting effect.
So how do we practice it day to day?
Actively notice good things that happen, even small ones. Then really stay with that positive feeling for maybe 30 seconds. Try to feel the positive emotions, appreciation, warmth, whatever it is throughout your body.
Savor it.
Exactly. It's not just about fleeting good feelings. Doing this actually strengthens the positive neural pathways in your brain, builds resilience.
Fascinating. Okay, let's shift gears slightly and talk about understanding mental health conditions. Mental health itself is defined as basically psychological well-being, right? Functioning okay emotionally and behaviorally.
Right. And a mental illness is a condition that affects your thinking, feeling, or mood to the point where it impacts your daily life and relationships. And the causes are usually complex, a mix of environment, lifestyle, maybe genetics, trauma, even brain chemistry.
Let's talk about some specifics mentioned.
Yeah.
Anxiety disorders. We all feel anxious sometimes, but when does it become a disorder?
The key difference is when the fear or worry is persistent, excessive, and happens in situations that aren't actually threatening. It becomes overwhelming, hard to control, and really interferes with your life, going to class, socializing, just functioning.
And it can show up physically, too.
Oh, yeah. Racing heart, feeling short of breath, nausea, maybe intense fatigue. If anxiety feels like it's taking over your life, the sources are clear. Seek professional help. Mm-hmm. Don't try to just tough it out alone.
Okay. What about eating disorders? The sources say they're unfortunately common among students.
Yes, often linked to stress, anxiety, or pressure in the college environment. The sources define a few key types.
Like?
Anorexia nervosa. This involves self-starvation, an intense, irrational fear of gaining weight, a very restricted diet, and often excessive exercise. Then there's binge eating disorder, or BID. That's characterized by frequently eating large amounts of food very quickly with a feeling of being out of control during the binge.
Okay.
And bulimia nervosa. This involves cycles of binge eating followed by purging, trying to compensate by vomiting, using laxatives, or other methods.
These sound incredibly serious.
They are. They can lead to severe health complications like heart problems or kidney failure. Anyone struggling needs stabilization and professional help, medical care, psychotherapy, counseling, coaching. The National Eating Disorders Association, NEDA, is a great resource.
Definitely important resources. Let's touch on depression. Again, mm-hmm. More than just feeling sad, right?
Much more. It's described as intense sadness lasting several days or weeks, often coupled with losing interest in things you used to enjoy. It can cause significant emotional and physical problems and really impair your ability to function day to day.
What causes it?
It can be triggered by many things, a life crisis, physical illness, trauma, even brain injury or substance misuse.
But the crucial takeaway is
that depression is a treatable medical condition. If you're experiencing persistent sadness that's stopping you from living your life, please talk to a mental health professional. There is help available.
Absolutely critical message. And finally, we need to discuss suicidal behavior. This is incredibly serious.
And extremely serious. Suicide is defined as intentionally harming oneself with the intent to end one's life. People contemplating it often feel this overwhelming sense of hopelessness, like their problems are permanent and insurmountable. But it's so important to know, as the sources state, most survivors of suicide attempts go on to live wonderful, full lives. Intervention can make all the difference.
What are the warning signs we need to look out for, especially if they're new or seem linked to a painful event?
Okay, pay close attention if someone is. Talking about wanting to die or kill themselves, looking for ways to do it, searching online, trying to get a weapon, talking about feeling hopeless, having no reason to live, feeling trapped, or being in unbearable pain.
Okay.
Saying they feel like a burden to others, increasing their use of alcohol or drugs, acting unusually anxious, agitated, or reckless, sleeping way too much or way too little, withdrawing from friends and family, isolating themselves, showing intense rage or talking about revenge, exhibiting extreme mood swings.
That's a comprehensive list. If we see these signs, what's the immediate action?
The absolute first step, if someone tells you they are going to kill themselves, is do not leave them alone. Stay with them. Then get help immediately. Call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-TAT-ALK, 8255. It's available 24/7.
Okay, 1-800-273-8255.
Or text the crisis text line. Text HOME to 741-741. That's also 247. And remember, the new 988 hotline number is rolling out too.
988, good to know.
Also, encourage them or help them. Reach out to campus health services, other resources like OK2 Talk or the NAMI helpline. Every second counts.
Thank you for covering that so clearly. It's vital information. Okay, shifting from our internal world again, let's look outwards to how we connect with others. There's this powerful finding from Dr. Robert Waldinger at the Harvard Study of Adult Development. He found that the people with the best health outcomes over decades were those who leaned into relationships with family, with friends, with community. That speaks volumes about the strength in relationships.
It really does. It highlights that our connections aren't just nice-to-haves. They're fundamental to our well-being. Healthy relationships, the sources say, are built on mutual respect and trust. It's about supporting each other through tough times, celebrating the good times, and being able to communicate honestly and easily.
That sounds ideal. But what about unhealthy relationships? They can really drag you down.
Absolutely. They often involve tense communication, maybe broken trust, feeling like you're not heard or appreciated or valued. And the sources warn against staying in relationships just because you're afraid of being alone or out of guilt. That's not healthy.
A really important point.
Yes, if there's any physical or verbal abuse, the advice is unequivocal. End the relationship immediately and seek support. Your safety comes first.
So important. And key to building and keeping these healthy connections is actually looking after ourselves first, right? Self-care.
Exactly. It's foundational, as the sources put it. Healthy relationships start with healthy individuals. Self-care isn't about being selfish. It's about learning to take good care of yourself and to prioritize your own needs.
Mm-hmm.
It means you actually have the energy and emotional capacity to show up fully and authentically in your relationships.
So what does that look like? Taking walks, doing yoga, reading, spending time with friends?
All of the above. Whatever genuinely recharges you, it's about filling your own cup so you have something to give.
And self-care is tied into self-esteem too, isn't it?
Deeply connected. Self-esteem is about loving yourself and being happy for who you are. Mm-hmm. If your self-esteem is low, it can really sabotage relationships, leading to jealousy, being defensive, or feeling like you have to change who you are to be accepted.
So part of self-care is challenging that negative inner voice.
Yes. Actively reverse negative self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrate what makes you unique. Own who you are.
And the sources mention self-forgiveness as part of this too.
Right. It's about acknowledging when you mess up, because we all do, but putting it in perspective, learning from it, and then being kind to yourself as you move forward, not getting stuck beating yourself up.
Makes sense. Okay, finally, let's talk about the wider circle. Community involvement, finding your people, especially relevant for college students.
Hugely relevant. The sources bring up the Nicoya Peninsula in Costa Rica, one of those blue zones where people live exceptionally long, healthy lives, a big part of their secret. They deeply prioritize family and social interaction. They're constantly connecting with each other. That sense of belonging is incredibly powerful.
And that translates directly to college life. Students who feel a strong sense of belonging, who get involved in their campus community, they tend to be more successful overall, and even get better grades. It's about finding your tribe, right?
Exactly. So actively look for communities you can connect with. This could be formal things, sports teams, clubs, maybe a fraternity or sorority, or informal communities, your neighbors in the dorm, people in your favorite study group or exercise class. Find shared interests.
And the benefits are huge. Friends provide meaning or purpose, and a good social life actually improves physical health too.
Yeah, research links strong social ties to lower blood pressure, better immune function, even a longer lifespan. It's amazing.
But it can be hard sometimes, especially starting college. The sources say 63% of students have felt lonely.
That's a really important statistic. If you're feeling lonely, know that you are absolutely not alone in feeling that way. And joining groups based on things you genuinely enjoy is a fantastic, low-pressure way to meet people and build those connections.
What a comprehensive look at well-being. Mm-hmm. This has been a real deep dive. The core message that really comes through is that your health isn't just one thing. It's this whole interconnected system, isn't it?
Totally interconnected. Everything from the food you choose, the water you drink, how you handle stress, the quality of your sleep, how you nurture your relationships. Every choice matters and impacts the whole system.
And it's not about making massive, overwhelming changes all at once.
Not at all. The real power is in small, consistent steps. Our sources even offer this neat little rule of eights as a kind of daily checklist.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
Aim each day for roughly 8 hours of sleep, 8 servings of fruits and vegetables, 8 glasses of water, 8 minutes of mindfulness and maybe 8 meaningful connections or interactions.
That's a great target. And movement.
And yeah, incorporate one of these 8 ways to move. Walking, aerobic exercise, strength training, yoga, tai chi, stretching, HIIT, or even just dancing. Pick one each day.
I love that. It makes it feel manageable. So this journey isn't just about preventing illness. It's really about building resilience, sharpening your focus.
And truly thriving. Making the most of your college experience and setting yourself up for a healthier, happier life beyond.
So here's something to think about.
What single small change feels achievable for you right now? What's one thing you could start with today to begin building that stronger foundation for your holistic health?
Because the key takeaway is that you do have the power to shape your health journey, one intentional choice at a time. Take that first step, whatever it is for you, and just see the ripple effect it creates. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today.